Blog Talk Radio.
Foxy 107-104, the Triangle's only station for R&B and classic soul. Here's my man, Eric Benet, news for you on Foxy 107.1 and 104.3. Foxy presents Anthony Hamilton live in concert. It's just days away. The Soulful Summer Tour with special guests, Eric Benet, Marcus Canty. And it's going down June 8th at the D-Pack. I want you, yes you, to keep listening for a chance to win free tickets. Foxy 107.1 and 104.3.
I was stupid, really stupid. Something told me deep inside, better not do it.
Triangle, get ready. You've waited, and now he's here. Back in the Triangle, national recording artist Anthony
Hamilton. Woke up this morning, found a letter that she wrote.
Anthony Hamilton live.
I need to get away.
Saturday night, June 8th at D-Pack. It's Anthony Hamilton. Foxy 107-104, the Triangle's only station for today's R&B and classic soul. This is Ty Jones. Ladies, we got tickets to see TGT. Ooh, Lord. And special guest, Fantasia. She really knows what setup is all about. I got some of that on the way, too. And here's R. Kelly. When a woman's fed up, I know about that. On Foxy 107-104.
Standing here looking in the mirror.
Foxy 107-104 was the station that Ty Jones herself was formerly a member of and provided nothing but the best in R&B and classic soul. Thank you, thank you. Oh, you're too sweet. Thank you, thank you so much. So tonight's show is going to be dedicated to, he's a writer, an actor, Eddie Gonzalez. I'm going to ask him how to pronounce that when he comes on. Eddie Gonzalez is an actor out of L.A., graduated from North Carolina State University, and I happened to catch the brother when he portrayed this very wealthy, kind of spoiled athlete, and the movie was called Coalition. I believe it was straight to DVD. And I happened to watch this a few years back. And so I was actually a fan from that moment on. With that said, I've been following his career and noticing that he's doing a new project. And that project would be called Muhammad Ali. So we're going to talk to the talented actor this evening, find out more about his latest endeavors, what's going on in L.A., and see what's going on with him currently with his career, his projects, and everything else. We'll get into some straight talk as well. This is Ty Jones, your host for The Voice of the People. And this evening, it is a Monday night. It happens to be a very special night for myself. It's my son's birthday. Oh, boy. 11 years old today, so I'm pretty excited about that, and pretty excited about the entire year. We're going to take this time to reflect and want to thank some of the guests that have been on The Voice of the People. Highly do appreciate everyone who has taken the time to be with me, and so I just want to acknowledge Mark Lee, co-host for The Voice of the People, Dean Geronimo, who's also a producer for the show, as well as J.L. Sean Claude, who has been a member of the cast, been on the show, had some insightful and very, very political, correct comments, questions, and giving great advice. He also is a author and writer, and we had him on the show, and Dr. J is someone who I highly do respect. So I want to thank Dr. J for taking the time to be a part of our cast. Nikema Lee is someone who stands out very much so to myself. I want to take the time to thank Nikema, a book writer and author. This sister has been well known for being a love coach, life
love, intimacy type of coach, assisting individuals with their relationships. And she tours and travels with Spot Nation, which is a very interesting group. She has books sold on eBay. And she just happens to be a very inspirational woman and someone that I truly admire. Nakima is the CEO and founder at Nakima Lee and Upscale Diary. And so if you want to catch up with her, please go look for her on Facebook. And she has been one of those women that just truly was very transparent and very open to just whatever was on her mind. And when people had questions about love, sex, and intimacy, she had no problem giving them her insight. So I just want to thank her as well. And moving forward, I just want to give everyone some insight about the Voice of the People. The show was created last year, September. It was dedicated to all of those that have a voice and feel like they cannot be heard or haven't been heard. So this show was a platform for everyone to come on, to give their testimony, to explain the things that they themselves have been through, go through, obstacles, and how they've overcome those things, as well as become the contender, the achiever, giving back to society in such a popular way, and such a beautiful way. So for that, we want to thank all of the guests that have been a part of this show. I believe we have Mark Lee in the studio with us right now. Mark, are you hailing in from the Bull City?
I am. What's up?
Just started the show and was reflecting on a few of the guests that have been on the Voice of the People, because the show has been going a year and 4 months, to be exact. And so I was taking the time to reflect on some of the guests that stood out to me the most that have contributed to society or doing things for this, for their communities, for the world. And this is why the show was created. Some of the people that stand out to me in particular was, of course, she's another North Carolina native, and her name is Nakima Lee. And Nakima was a phenomenal sister. She was a reoccurring guest, and she's also CEO and founder of her own company, which she herself calls, what does Nakima call that company? Upscale Diaries. She's a love, sex, life coach, and she's definitely was very transparent with all of our Pillow Talk episodes. So for that, I want to thank Nakima. We also have Dr. J, who was the co-host prior to Mark Lee coming on board. Dr. J was also a book author, had his PhD in theology, and he was a very memorable guest. A lot of people called and supported him. And several others that have called in, from Ray Buchanan's wife, who called and admitted to the world that she likes being a cougar. She likes being wealthy and dating younger men in their 30s. We've had breast cancer survivors, philanthropists, book authors, rappers. You name it, we've had it on this show. So I've just taken the time to reflect on and given thanks to all the memorable moments. If you have any memorable moment and things you would like to share right now, now is the time to do so, Mark Lee.
Yeah, so like you said, we've had some great guests. I definitely have enjoyed having many of those on, including the one that is related to you, who is a musician. He was very much a very talented musician. I've always enjoyed hearing his songs that we've played on a regular basis. And, of course, like you mentioned, the breast cancer survivor, who actually was one of my coworkers and has written a book based loosely on her own cancer survivor skills and everything. So that was a very good guest, Elizabeth Hyland. And then we also had a young lady who is breaking out and making her own animation series, Jasmine Truesdale. She's breaking out there doing her own cartoons and animations and everything. So she was one of our guests, and was definitely a very powerful to have. And Then Winona Satcher, who, like you said, is a entrepreneur, but was also doing these things with having people be imagining book covers. And we know that sometimes our youth can see those old stale book covers and be like, I don't want to read that book. That book doesn't relate to me. So he was part of a national book cover competition that I actually went to that party later on, and I believe it was last up. And some of those covers definitely caught your eye and made you rethink some of the, like Uncle Tom's Cabin. After you see the cover that they made for it, you'll never think of it the same.
Right.
It definitely has.
Well, there's a few. We've definitely have like had some memorable guests, but you know, big shout out to Mike G from the Jungle Brothers. He came on the show and he delivered yet a wonderful testimony and just put a lot of issues to bed with people questioning whether or not was the group still together. And he confirmed that, yes, we are still together and going strong and things such as that. We had, you know, several other musical artists on the show, from jazz to R&B to hip hop. And so some of the names that stand out to me would have to be, big shout out to Seneca the Misfit, representing the DMV. Seneca was a very talented guest that we had, and he was very passionate about his art, his craft, and also that he would never compromise just for a label deal, but he happened to get a label deal with Sony Records. We've also had my cousin, Jay Reed. We've had D. Lucas, a soprano saxophonist. Cassandra Kelly, she's from Greensboro, North Carolina, as an artist, and her music was inspirational. We've had several others. Clarence Anthony, he was an artist out of Florida and had just came back from the Philippines. And his music was very motivational, but very much sort of like that crooner's type of feel to it, like a Mint Condition or taking back that old school version of R&B. So these are some of the guests that are most memorable to me. And I did put the post on Facebook yesterday acknowledging those. And for those that I did not remember, I was at least, I made that clear as well, because I always want to go back and thank all of those that have participated and been instrumental with assisting us with making the show for what it is, because without the guests and the listeners and the people that, you know, like us on Facebook, like my posts, the voice of the people would not continue or exist.
Cool. Who was the young cat we had? It was a very young cat we had. I think he was out of California. I don't remember his name off the top of my head.
Keita. We had little Keita.
Right. That's the one I was
Little
about,
Keita
right.
was an amazing young man who, he's a dancer, choreographer, tours and travels. And little Keita, I remember Keita. He was very, he does a lot of TV appearances currently. He's doing choreography. I think him and his mom were preparing for a movie, actually, was what he was in preparation for before doing the show. And yeah, we've actually gotten a lot of support from people out of California. Majority of our people have been California. We've had people from Florida, up north, New York. We even had our guests from Nigeria, which I was very grateful to do that, because that was when I started the show by myself, before having a co-host or a producer or anyone. So big shout out to Joe Ulaito out of Nigeria, Lagos, Nigeria. And Joe was very insightful to give us some insight on how the economy is in Nigeria, how the world is on his end. And he does work for a global advertising agency, Saatchi Saatchi. So Joe was very insightful to give a non-biased opinion on how the world really is going on that end of the world, and not just what the media portrays of certain countries in Africa. So that was actually pretty pretty refreshing to have, because the media does paint negative images sometimes of other countries, and we only put what we want the world to feed into, which is the negative, the wars, the outbreaks, the, you know, the political stances that people are having, poverty or crime, you know what I mean? Where, for example, his country happens to be a very wealthy country and doing very well in a lot of their resources, natural fine resources. Even the only thing that they are still having tweaking is their electricity issues. But overall, I mean, this guy lives on a compound, has servants, and hey, he's a great, great guy.
I don't know if y'all talked about it, but Nigeria has actually got one of the, and I think at some point, I think our guest today is supposed to be a filmmaker, but in terms of the filmmaking community, the Nollywood community is probably one of the top-rated film communities in the country. And they actually have a Nigerian, well, an African film award that is based by a Nigerian. I think it might have been started here in North Carolina, but it's now based, I believe, in either Atlanta or D.C. But they've been doing these Nollywood awards for a while and honor a lot of those great African filmmakers, a lot of them coming straight out of Nigeria, which has created its own film empire.
Right. Well, yeah, and I know the music scene for them there is actually rather big. It's a big thing. They have, and Joe himself has sent me several artists, and I have to work on that project again because he did have recording artists that were very popular and that wanted to be guests on the show. I just haven't had the time to juggle and put these people on the show, you know. But I got to just reconnect with him so that can happen. But we're going to see if Eddie is going to call in. Eddie is actually not a filmmaker. Eddie is an actor. Eddie is... he graduated from North Carolina State, and Eddie is an actor out of L.A. He is working on a current project, which is Muhammad Ali. And with that said, I have been following his career for some years now because the first movie that I witnessed or watched of his was a movie called The Coalition. And it was I believe it just went straight to DVD, and it was inspired by actual events. Pretty much just, it was a Magnolia. With Magnolia, I believe that has, I don't know if Magnolia is something to do with T.D. Jakes. But with that said, I know that it was it's like a chick flick. It was about, you know, a young man. He's wealthy. He's an athlete. He's got his entourage. They love him and leave him type of men. And you had Adrian, who used to be with the Cheetah Girls. She was in it. A few other people that their faces are recognizable. And it was pretty entertaining. And the females wound up flipping it on the guys, kind of like that the movie Steve Harvey's book, I Think Like a Man kind of thing, when the women get some insight and they just learn how to flip it on the brothers. So it was kind of one of those scenarios, but it's a great movie. Go catch it. It's on DVD. I have the photograph on the Facebook page. I'm pretty sure you can find it in Redbox. I think I might have found it in Redbox, or you can find it on Netflix, I'm pretty sure. I was pretty impressed with his, the things that he had going on. And I just started reaching out to him from Facebook back in, I think, 2013. And he and I just continued to correspond. And I follow him, and he just seems to be a very humble brother who is talented. And, just doing his thing. Seems like, you know, LA is treating him very well. And we all know that it can be challenging being an actor, and especially African American, and competing in this world and in the Hollywood world and trying to keep yourself fresh and reinventing yourself and things such as that. So, Yeah, and I'm pretty sure you should know a thing or two about that. But I have some good news to share with you. I don't know if you've been reading or looking at some of the posts on Facebook, but I recently I am a contender for a reality show myself.
I did see that.
Right. So that was a project that I guess a few months ago I auditioned. I guess that was back in, I want to say, August. It might have been September. The guy happened to see me on Facebook. I think he put up a post. I responded. Then first I was shy because I'm not, you know, I don't mind being behind the scenes, believe it or not. I do fine taking photographs and posing for photographs, but, you know, to be in front of the camera is something that, you know, I'm not shy, but it's not something that I always, you know, push myself to do. But I said, why not? So it's called the Action Reality Actors. It's going to be about 8 struggling artists that are trying to make it in the business. And my character that I'm auditioning for is a pop star who's very self-absorbed. go figure. So we'll see. I'm gonna have fun with it, but the live auditions should be going on in February. Who's that background noise right there? Is that Dean Geronimo?
Somewhere.
Yeah, it sounds like, are you driving right now?
Actually, I am.
That's what's up. Just be safe.
Just be safe. Don't have no wrecks. Don't cause no accidents.
Don't have. So don't have no wrecks, and don't be on the next issue of Busted, okay?
No, we don't want that. Busted. It's Slammer.
That's your magazine,
Slammer.
Isn't it?
Slammer. Slammer.
Is it Slammer? Is that what it's called?
Slammer.
I try to avoid those. Like, if I do it, it's on a down low and nobody knows about it.
Okay, I see.
Right.
Speaking of Steve Harvey, and you mentioned him earlier in conjunction with our guests and everything, but what did both of you think about this whole mess of him naming the wrong guest? I mean, sure, it was his first time. I think they need to cut the brother a break.
You think you need to cut him a break?
Why not cut him a break? Wasn't it his first time hosting the Miss Universe?
But, you know, hey, you know what it is? I don't judge anybody, you know, bloopers, like, you know, are something that always happen. It's live. You can't redo it. You can't take it back. So all you can do is just keep it moving and pray for the best and don't harp on the negatives and just, like, continue to have a good show, whatever it is you do. I think I learned that. You should have learned that doing radio for years, you know. There's been many a times where I fumbled, you know, opening that mic. And I remember one time I did it when I was covering for Cy Young, which that was a big deal for, you know, he used to let me sit in on his shift, which is a big deal for a part-timer to be doing the midday shift. So the bottom line was the producer had some of the buttons labeled wrong. So it was supposed to say one thing, like we're taking a station ID break, but then it wound up saying it's time for entertainment comedy. And he just, like, busted in the studio and was like, what in the hell? And he chewed my ass out royally. I shed, I think, 2 tears. Then I sucked it up. I was pissed off. Then one of the other producers came in and he looked over at me and he said, he pretty much said to me, get over it. Don't take it personal. You got a show to do and the show must go on. And I think back then, and now I was 26 back then when that happened, you know?
And that's what you. that's the way you're supposed to handle these things. My dad was a veteran radio person, and he made some glitches and everything, and like he just kept it moving when he was doing radio. I've kept it moving when I've done radio, made glitches. I really made glitches on this show, but you just keep it moving,
yeah.
And I agree with you on that. But what you don't do is you don't come back and do a Twitter where you didn't misspell both names.
Oh, did he do that?
Yes, he did that too. He also went back and he misspelled both Colombia and the Philippines in his
wow.
Twitter response.
He misspelled the word Philippines?
Yes, and he misspelled Colombia.
How do you misspell Colombia? Like, that's such an easy word. But whatever. You know what it is? I'm kind of glad that he's messing up. Not to say I shouldn't be mean like that, but honestly, he gets on my nerves sometimes, Steve Harvey does. I'm not trying to be funny, but I am being funny. Like, he gets on my nerves. Like, he's too arrogant, to be honest with you. It's like ever since he cut that hair off and he's no longer, you know, just an actor doing his show, whatever, and used to be known as a comedian when he was, like, Kings of Comedy, whatever. He's gotten very, like, big for his britches type of mental, egotistical, arrogant. And who the hell said that he was the doctor of love and telling everybody what the fuck to do with their relationships? I just want to know. Hello?
Hey, probably the same
I'm sure. Dean, do you got something sarcastic to say about that, or am I being out of pocket? Wait a minute. I want to hear from you two. What? Go ahead.
I mean, the relationship part only matters to those who are suffering in relationships. So if that's what you – if you're taking his advice, the 90-year rule, you're going to have dust coming out your shit because ain't nobody going to be waiting that damn long. But, hey, that if some people follow it, I mean, I wouldn't follow it because I think for myself, I don't need a relationship coach. Anybody,
right.
Not just anybody. Don't tell me what to do. Dr. Spock told people don't teach your kids, and his son committed suicide. So, you know, like, don't,
right.
You know, that's your thing, that's your thing. But he made a whole lot of money telling some lonely souls to try something different. So on that
exactly.
End, you know what? I'm not mad at him because he saw where there's a lot of people crying. It ain't no good women. It ain't no good men. He was like, all right, we'll try this. And then he sold it, and they bought it. The game is to be sold. So they bought the game. Don't, you know, you can't get mad at them when you wait 90, try to make a dude 90 days and go fuck somebody else. You know what I'm saying? Or he walks out because it don't take that long to mesh with somebody, but in my opinion. But, I mean, if that's what they want to do, he capitalized on it. A fool in their money
he
is
did. He did. He did. Because
so he found a bunch of fools.
Yeah, I mean, and it started, and it started when he from
I mean,
that,
you know,
that movie Think Like a Man. That's where it started from the Think Like a Man. Then he had the book, and then the movie came out, and then the next thing you know, Steve Harvey becomes the doctor of relationships. Really? I beg to differ.
To be honest, no man want a woman that thinks like a man because you're going to act like a man, and I'm not gay. I don't want to be with a man.
These are the same people that though that believe that Donald Trump isn't going to be successful because he's supposed to be a successful business person. But remember, this is also the man that had several bankruptcies.
Well, believe it or not, I don't consider just because you're great in business that you're supposed to be a political leader and you're well suited to run this country. But that's just my opinion.
And I agree with you. And my other part of that is that I'm not convinced he's a great business leader. A lot of that money came from his daddy. And he
okay,
went down into the ground.
A lot of people thought Ronald Reagan was a great actor and let him run this country. Thank you for crack.
That's true.
And thank you for boss. So,
yeah, thank
you,
for crack. Thank you for the crack epidemic because Reaganomics was ridiculous. Reaganomics was the worst ever since the Bush administration, which that was another flop. You know, he flopped. Reagan flopped. Don't talk about Carter. JFK was phenomenal. Fucking Clinton was the blackest president we ever had. Clinton was blacker than Obama. Yeah, I said it. Bill Clinton, in my opinion, was more of a brother than Barack Obama. That's just me. He was for our people more than Obama, in my opinion, is for our people. But I'm not saying. I'm just saying people thought that when Obama got into office, he was going to be for the black people. He's not for anybody. He's for the human race.
That's a nigga shit. Just because he's
why
black.
Why is that nigga shit?
Because he got a whole country to run, and y'all motherfuckers ain't doing shit to do yourself.
But
you
listen, if you didn't hear what I said, I didn't say I wanted him to be a race card. I'm just saying that's what some people thought he was going to be. They thought the blacks thought the minute he got into office, it was about them, which he showed you otherwise. It's about the people, not just you.
And Bill told you otherwise when his wife lost that nomination. They told you exactly what they felt about him. So a whole lot of people who was back in Bill Clinton, yet Bill Black and Bill did some real ignorant nigga shit when his wife didn't win the nomination. And he got they showed you what they really think of y'all black asses when y'all didn't vote for him the first time.
No, I'm just saying when he was in office, not now when his wife is running. I'm talking about the past when he was in office.
He's still white.
I know he's white.
He's a white man. He was white when he got in the office. He played the joint. Let me let these niggas think I'm down with the program. And they gonna love me. Let me go get my dick sucked in the White House and skeet on the broad dress. And they go and then deny the shit. And niggas is gonna love me.
Really?
And then throw in
a little bit of saxophone. Then throw in a little saxophone so you can say that I play a little jazz and
he's
got a little bit of brother in me.
He did that saxophone on. Wait a minute, he did that on the Arsenio Hall show, guys.
So what? Hey, a white man playing the saxophone. Kenny G been playing the motherfucking shit for years.
Exactly.
And, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not voting for her either. Ain't even voting for nobody. Because they're going to say, what's the point of voting? So the crowd that she's trying to reach.
So what's your opinion on Bernie Sanders, huh?
What I feel about Bernie Sanders?
Yeah.
Somebody that's not afraid to confront the shit that's really happening, but he gets no airplay because he's touching on issues that nobody wants to talk about. Everybody wants to talk about ISIS, ISIS that. ICE is nothing. The country trained these motherfuckers, and now they turn it on you, and now you get
exactly.
I still think he's the likely candidate that will get my vote out of all those niggas. I'm sorry.
He's the only one that's covering real issues that matter, things that matter
to
people. See, they're trying to blind you with all this ISIS shit. I'm not trying to hear about ISIS. I don't give a damn
about thinking
them.
About no. I don't care about that. Like that's not
Bernie,
the real issue. I want to know
Bernie,
when the fuck are y'all gonna turn around and do healthcare the right way? When are y'all gonna bring back healthcare the right fucking way? Okay. When are y'all gonna start like lowering the cost of education in the United States? When are you gonna do something that raises the minimum wage for people? Let's talk about the people. Let's not do this whole world. Global issues. I'm talking about the stuff that affects blue and white collar workers on a day-to-day basis, and these are the people that everybody constantly overlooks. Constantly.
Yeah, but you gotta be careful with that. You gotta be careful with that because people are saying there are no jobs. However, you got guys that come in here from Mexico and all of those Latin
they make a job.
Come here and they get paid off for every job that some of us are not willing to do. They make
they'll go scrub floors. They'll go get on somebody's truck and move for them. They'll clean. They'll cook. They do stuff that us lazy ass people in America won't do.
We got a high school diploma. We want to make $50,000. How the fuck you think you make $50,000 and somebody with a damn degree can find a job? Are you kidding me?
And when I say raise minimum wage, I'm not talking about raise minimum wage. At minimum wage right about now, because of the economy and the way the cost of living is, minimum wage, yes, does need to be raised. You go to a state like Chattanooga, Tennessee, people are still getting paid $7 and $8 an hour. And these are women that work in childcare. These are some people that work in, and I'm not talking about no fast food. I'm talking about in certain, you know, different brackets of employment. This lady is struggling. She's making $7 an hour, and she's taking care of your kids that she's certified CPR, first aid, has a degree, working at a school, and she's only making $7 an hour. Get the fuck out of here with that. Ain't nobody worrying about that shit. And then she got to still go and apply for food stamps because she can't afford to feed her family? Come on now. There's something wrong with that.
She working
full
time.
She got to work two jobs.
Okay. So now
she
got to
work two jobs. So this person has got to work two jobs. She got to pay a babysitter or hopefully has a relative that will watch her child while she's taking care of somebody else's kids and make a minimum wage. And she does have a degree, and it was in child care. It's just the state that she lives in, they start these people up at $7 and $8 an hour. That's
maybe
my
you either
want
to, if you got a degree in child care, you got the experience, maybe you want to open your own daycare, or you might want to change your career.
Well, guess what, Dean? Some people, that costs money. And if they don't have the money to take care of their families, how the hell are they finding money to open a place unless they go find a grant, get a loan, things like that? Like, it's tough out here in this world. You know what I'm saying? I'm not saying that everybody's perfect, but I'm saying things like that. People need to raise the minimum wage.
No, they don't.
What you saying, man? I think
no,
the minimum wage should be raised.
If you raise the minimum wage, then me, I'm going to ask that you raise my pay, too.
Well, then raise your pay, too, then, shit. Raise your pay. Because, honestly, everybody, a minimum wage should need to be raised. That's my opinion.
You better change your career. I worked in retail my first 7 years out of college. You pay $20,000, $25,000. No matter where I go, $30,000 when you become a manager. It's a career change time. Now, if you want to make more money, sometimes you got to step out the box.
And I receive everything you're saying. And so that just goes, do a person stay stagnant and complacent? Or yes, you're absolutely right. Do they make that executive decision to say, I'm going to do a career change. I'm going to have to change up because this lifestyle is not working for me. Mark Lee, do you got anything to say about that?
Well, first off, I got a couple of things to say about that. One, I thoroughly agree that we need to raise that minimum wage, and I've actually got a figure, and I thoroughly support us raising it to $15 an hour because I think that that's what it
needs to be. I think $15 an hour is what the minimum wage should be in 2015. We're about to go into 2016. Ain't nobody should be busting their ass for no $10 an hour.
I agree with you, sir. And the other thing I would add to that, though, is that
it's not
now I gotta add something to what Dean said. So let me go and give y'all an example though. My younger brother, you talk about like it's easy to set up something and everything, and how that works and everything. My younger brother actually set up two businesses dealing with at-risk youth before he got his college degree, and then they turned around after he got his college degree and said, "Hey, guess what? All of that stuff that you did doesn't count." We don't care that y'all set up two businesses. We don't care that you did all of this. There were some other people, not him, but some other people that basically ruined that industry in the chat risk youth industry. And so they basically said, look, we don't care what y'all did. Y'all might have done it right. But because y'all came in during this era, we're going to wipe it all clean. So even though you set up two, and I believe it might have been three businesses, that don't count. So now he's having to go back and get his master's in crisis management and get back at it to the workforce and basically start back. I can't tell you how many times he's gone for job interview and they've basically been like, it didn't count.
Right.
Well, you know,
they raise minimum wage $15 an hour. They're going to start computerizing a whole lot of shit and then people are going to get phased out.
Starting to phase people out. Like, for example, I'll go into my bank. I bank with Chase Bank. Now, there's one branch. There are no tellers in this branch. You walk in, You have a customer service rep that's on the floor. They meet with you. They talk to you. Then if you want to set up an account, you can set up the account immediately. They even print you and put your name on a debit card that you can use that same day. If you want to make deposits, they have a few machines that you walk up to inside the bank, input your card, input your information. You can make your own deposits and all of that, all of those type of transactions right there inside the bank. So they are downsizing and eliminating tellers because now they're starting to see, you know, so certain people's jobs are starting to be phased out. Somebody needs to just open themselves a damn laundromat, you know, dry cleaners, go cut some hair, a barbershop, those type of jobs. People are going to always have dirty clothes. People are always going to need their hair cut. Go start a business like that. Certain things, if you don't up your ante, up your education, or have something as an entrepreneur to own of your own, guess what? Your job might be obsolete tomorrow. And you all know that's the reality.
Oh, that's very real. But I gotta add a couple of things to that. One, you named a lot of jobs that are very much in our industry and very much in our community, and have always been in our community. You're right. A lot of us have opened up barbershops. A lot of us have opened up, well, not a lot, but a few of us have opened up dry cleaners. A whole lot of us have opened up funeral homes, because that's one that we all
own. Oh, yeah, funeral homes, but, too. Now, I've got to look into that, because there was a sister that, she's into lobotomy, but I have my, you know, Kirk, Mark. Wow. Kirk knows the what are they, what's their name, the Scarborough?
I know Scotty. The Scarboroughs, and and also I was just talking to Miss Jones. She is a sister that has been running her own Scarborough. She runs the Ellison Jones Funeral Home. She's probably in her 40s.
Yeah, now Scotty's parents are very prominent, wealthy black people in Durham, North Carolina, and they own the funeral homes, daycares, and they employ people in the community. Now, see, these are the type of things, like, for example, my godmother, Deborah Bryson. Miss Bryson owns two Christian Montessori schools. She's been in business for over 20 years and a pillar in the community. And she's doing something, giving back to the community. She's employed many people. Her children work for her. I used to work for her. And she didn't pay no $7 an hour, you know, to be a teacher at her school if you had your degree and your credentials. She would pay certain people what she felt was deserving for the degree they had. And if they continue to rise in their degree or in their credentials, then she wouldn't mind an increase, because she's a private-owned school and receiving assistance from the state because of vouchers and things such as that. But these are the kind of businesses that will stay afloat, because children are going to always be produced. People are always going to need assistance for child care. You know, people always need to go get their car washed or their clothes washed, or certain restaurants will always stay in business, burgers and fries or things like that. Not exotic restaurants, but just your normal, everyday mom and pop. Certain things are still pillars in certain people's community, and they don't go out of style.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. And the other thing I would add to that is that we also have to remember that certain jobs, they've been saying, would be computerized and driven out of business forever. They've said that about the newspaper industry. It's still around. It might have changed,
but
it's still around.
Look at what happened with radio. When I was working in radio, this was back when I was 26, when I worked at Radio 1, we hired Truett O'Neill. Truett went on to do the Yolanda Adams show, and now Truett's not even in radio. I hear Truett's a professor now. I think he's working over at Central. Now, with that said, I'm 42 now. Back then, I was 25. When Cy asked me to go look for someone, we hired Truett. And Truett, believe it or not, because, you know, he was really good with technology and things such as that, Truett's job in the beginning, when he first got a job at the station, he was loading every CD that we had in our library into the Scott system, because we were about to transform into automation. And we were going to become automated. So when that happened, automation and not just doing anything, everything manual, that's what really just downsized everyone that were just part-timers, on-air announcers. They didn't need all those people anymore. That's why a lot of people in radio lost their jobs, because now you can go into the studio, record a four-hour shift in 2 hours. You can set that thing on autopilot, and the person cannot even be in the studio. Now you got syndicated shows that come in. So now radio, as we know it, is not like it used to be. So there's not as many people employed in these physical buildings. You know what I'm saying?
No, I thoroughly agree with you on that. I've seen it even on the nonprofit side. I mean, Chuck Central has several shows that are no longer having the people power that they used to have and everything. So I definitely would agree with y'all on that. But all I'm saying is that there are certain fields that people have said would be destroyed by automation, and we're finding out that the skill set is not happening that way. I mean, people said that the other job that I do, in addition to my entertainment stuff, is I grade test takers for a company.
Right, you've been doing that for a long time, haven't you?
I've been doing that for a long time. I've been doing it for over 10 years. And
grading test takers. But my question, before we get into that, Mark, because Dean, I don't mean to keep going in and out with you, but it's just it's really staticky where you are. But I just have a question for you, Dean. The type of work that you do where you are, do you feel like some of those people would be faded out due to technology, or that's not going to happen in your field?
I work in a prison. I work in prison. They automated the one part where guys can now email to their family back and forth. They can send their request form by email, computer. You still got to have the individual to read the request and put them to the... So the only thing is make somebody's job a little easier, because you don't have to go and collect those forms anymore. All you got to do is print them out.
Just a few things have been tweaked due to technology, but the manual part of having the physical manpower there to help run that facility is still needed, is what you're saying.
That's correct. You'll never, the funeral home business, hospitals, and prisons are all guaranteed employment, because you can't automate those things. Those things
still have to have
interaction and human contact. Now, a lot of the other things outside of those industries, they're starting to automate. I mean, it's going to be to the
like,
point
look,
after
look at, look at, look at, for example, okay, I don't know what type of the grocery stores are up north, but I know, Mark, where you live, you got Kroger just like I have Kroger. Y'all have Harris Teeter. We got Publix over here in Atlanta. Publix is similar to Harris Teeter. And Walmart. Everybody got a damn Walmart. But y'all know you do have those self-serve cash registers that you can just go up to, scan your items, you know, whatever, whatever. And then some of these stores, like where I live in the Buckhead area, the Kroger stays open till midnight, sometimes 1 in the morning. So I could walk up in there and there's maybe just one person who's overseeing those registers just to make sure, you know, the technical issues are assessed if necessary. But we just go in there, scan your items, boom, you're out of there. You know what I mean? Which is replacing physical cashiers. And so now with that said, the same thing in the bank. They don't need all those tellers. They're using technology to count that money. They don't need these physical people. So now that's just saying, confirming what Barack Obama said when he was in his first term, which is education is key. This world is going to continue to advance in technology. And the areas that people should pinpoint is science, biology, technology, IT. Those are the type of fields. If you want to still be competitive in this day and age, you should be doing. Or case in point, people could talk shit all they want to, every day, all day about the voice of the people. I'm not fucking going anywhere. You feel what I'm saying? This show is going to be in existence until the Lord above takes me away from here. Like I was telling Mark Lee Dean when we first started the show before you did jump on, I acknowledged many guests and thanked a lot of our guests for being a part of this show. Without them, the Voice of the People would not exist. But the beauty about this show is we are on the internet. We are world fucking wide. We are not just heard in the town we live in. We are heard throughout the United States, and in any country that you have internet access, you can log on and listen to this show. And it's necessary because the way technology is going, I'm going to get funding for this show. That door is going to open. Money will start to come to me. Just so you guys know, I'm working on a project, and I'm not quite sure if you guys are familiar with this man, but he's in his 50s now. He was working at Hot 97 in New York City. His name is Star. He went with the Star and Buck Wild show. Are y'all familiar with him? His name was Star. It was Star and Buck Wild. Well, his real name is Troy Torian. Troy and I spoke yesterday. Now, he is doing a YouTube show. And he is getting, like, on one of his shows, he got well over 20,000 views. So he's going to be moving here to Atlanta, Georgia. So with that said, he and I had a conversation yesterday, and he's looking at adding me and this show and some of our material to his show, to his YouTube show. And he was even giving me some insight on how to generate revenue for the show and letting me know that tie out with the old way of doing business with chasing down advertisers to advertise on your show to generate revenue. Now you want to go to the big dogs and get companies to sponsor your shows, things such as that, because he's being sponsored by like three companies that sponsor his show for funding. So with that said, it's time for me. It's time for you, you men, to reset the game when it comes to the mental and how serious you guys are about the Voice of the People, because I'm going to take this show somewhere, and I'm not going to stop. I always thank God for Mark Lee, for the sweat equity that you give. I always thank God for Dean, because I look up to the both of you as brothers to me, as voices that are very proactive, very non-political, but very liberal, and you guys have been very loyal to the cause, and that is being a voice and stepping out on faith and just running with me when it comes to doing this show. So that is something that's very important for me. This is why I continue to push the show. I thank God that when you guys are there to cover me when I'm not able to get on the air, and all of these newfound activities or projects I'm doing, you know, auditioning for this reality show and this, you know, Star coming to me to want to add material to his show. All of these things are just to enhance this show. The more exposure I get, the more assistance I can get with funding for the Voice of the People. So that's just something I wanted to mention.
Well, just to add to that, and I'm going to go into a long discussion about it, but just to add to that, I just got in contact from some people at the Center for Documentary Studies who actually, they were reaching out to me about the film festival at HATAB, but it actually fits into what you were saying, because they were making the fact that at the film festival in February, they have noticed that there is a shortage of people using YouTube and the other mediums out of our community. So they want to do a whole panel discussion on this in February. I'm actually supposed to meet with a young lady this week or no later than right after Christmas to figure out how we're going to incorporate the use of YouTube and the different kind of medium into the discussion.
Well, let's just say, I'm not to cut you off, Mark, but let's just say Star is going to assist us or assist me with getting us on YouTube, because that's going to be another angle that we can use to promote this show.
And I was agreeing with you. I'm just saying that that's actually what this lady was saying, is with the Center for Documentary Studies. She was saying that too many people are not doing what Star is doing. So she was actually saying that she wants to hold a whole panel discussion about media and the media industry, showing that that is something that we as Black people need to be looking into.
Yeah, and we should. And, you know, there's a lot of people like himself. who used to work in commercial radio, was doing stuff for commercial radios. It was a very popular one. It was a Starbuck Wild show. Everybody in New York City knows who Hot 97 was. So now this brother has taken all of his knowledge and put it to where it needs to be, into himself, and then giving back to the community and saying, bump the old-fashioned way of doing radio. We taking it over this way, and we can still generate revenue from it so I could feed my family, and still doing things to give back to the world, whether it be in information, entertainment, education, whatever. So this is the next phase for us, because we're going to come into a new year. And with that said, I'm looking for fresh content. I'm looking for better ideas from y'all. I want us to do things outside the box. You know, if I need to, you know, have Dean, if you need to have something due to where you work and you want to do a topic that deals with things that go on in the prison, let's talk about it. You know, if Mark, if you have some issues that are going on in Durham dealing with, you know, I don't know, whatever it be, black on black crime, gang, you know, the sexism, racism, socialization, whatever the case may be, let's talk about it. We don't always have to have guests on this show. We are very intelligent people that can have quality content and continue to keep the show fresh. And I believe in that. Well, we wouldn't be going this far.
Give an example of going there right now, because I've actually got a question that people have been asking me that I'm kind of curious about that D would know the answer to.
What's that?
Which is, what does D think of the commercialization of prisons? Because that's something that a lot of people in Durham are starting to worry about. They're thinking that the prisons are becoming too much of a commercial business and less of a actual correction.
Depends on a lot of the prisons are still run and owned by the state. There are a few that are privatized, but the way it's being reported is that the majority is privatized, which is not actually the case. But the state still have oversight over the majority of the prisons. For the private prisons, I look at it like this. If someone comes to prison, it really does not matter who runs it. The biggest thing
What do you mean it doesn't matter who runs it? Why? Why is that?
It doesn't matter, because prison is prison, jail is jail. They're holding offenders.
What's the difference between prison and jail? I don't know.
What's the difference between, if someone is sentenced to jail, if they go to jail, they're going to spend 12 months or less. 12 months and one day, any more time when you start going into years, then that's penitentiary time. But the thing is, they all hold those who broke some law somewhere. So now, I mean, you can't really say, oh, well, it's not right that Corrections Corporation of America is running 60 prisons nationwide. Well, they have 60, but it's over 2.2 million men and women that are incarcerated to this day. So now, those 60 prisons don't mean anything. You know what I'm saying? Those 60 prisons are less than 5%.
Do y'all allow some of those brothers go into like those long the prisons? Aren't they allowed to do they get to do education? Because I'll just say, I had an uncle. He's no longer in prison, but he was in Utica. He was in Utica for a while, and he was in you know, the place Fishkill, I think it was called Fishkill or whatever. And he was able to get education when he was in prison. And he was a very spiritual person. Now, do you do that, Dean?
Back in the late 80s, early 90s, you know, guys were shit. That's where all the Pell Grant money went to. Guys were in prison getting Pell Grants, getting masters, bachelors, doctorates, all kinds of things. And then they moved away from... they moved away from the programming aspect. When I first started in corrections, they had a GED class, and other than that, you had chess, cards, and weights. You know, but now, after about 2000, in about 2000, they start moving back to the rehabilitative piece. Here, I can only speak now for the state of New Jersey, where I've been, you know, my first 7 years were in Virginia, but the last 10 years have been here in New Jersey. Here in New Jersey, we have an office, it's called an Office of Transitional Services, where we do the offender programming, you know, anger management, cognitive behavioral program, family reunification. What else? We got the parenting group for men and women. We have employment program. We have a reentry program, you know, on that side. The Office of Educational Services helps those. It is a law that any offender under the age of 21 is mandated that they go to school. So they have to go to school up until they're 21, at which time they either earn a GED or they sign themselves out of school. There are a couple of institutions that do have a STEP program where you earn credits towards a college degree. You know, so it is, it's there, but rehabilitation doesn't start with the institution. Rehabilitation starts with the offender. So, you know, we offer these, and only those who are truly ready to change themselves participate in these programs. You still have some dudes that just want to lock in and say that. That's all they want to do.
Yeah, they but just they the just want. Guys, so, but are those young men that are doing that, or is that the older men that just want to lock in and lay down?
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
On the person. When you
how much,
you know,
do you think is actually, how many of the people in prison do you think are actually trying to be rehabilitated, and how many do you think are trying to just go to prison? You, meaning that they're trying to learn how to do crimes better.
If I had to put a percentage on it, I would say 75, maybe about 75 to 80% are trying to change. They're on their second and third bid. You got guys in there that's in the prison. This is my fourth ride, and I'm tired. And the change is only going to happen when you get tired. It's the same as if you got somebody out here that curses all the time when they talk, and that's all they do is curse all the time and say something negative about people.
Yeah.
Until they get tired, they will not try to change their situation. You got a lot of guys in there, and people don't believe it. They think, oh, well, you know, you've been in prison. You're one of the worst people in the world. But then I'll say to them, I want you to look at your family, and you tell me you don't have at least one person that's been in jail or prison. Everybody makes that mistake. Some are more severe than others. We made mistakes that if you look back on your life, you should have been in prison, but you didn't. The only difference is you were lucky not to have gotten caught. So now, what do you do? You're in prison. What's next? What's the next move? You're here now. And like I say to the guys, you know, you're here now. What's next? Because when you get out, they're going to be out of 10 people, eight of them expect you to fail. It's up to you to prove them wrong and never come this way again. Something that we're doing in all the transitional services, obviously educational services, is working, because when I first got here in 2006, there was about 29,000 individuals statewide in prison. Since that time, we've closed two prisons, and we're down to about 21 and a half.
So does that mean that they're over? Are they overcrowded?
It's not overcrowded. It's just a lot. It was a lot of people in prison. We had 14 prisons statewide when I first got here. When I first got here, there were 14 prisons. There's one reception center, one female institution, and 12 male institutions. Now we have one reception center, one female institution, and 10 male prisons. We reduced the population enough to close two prisons and on the way to possibly closing a third. But that's because they're getting out.
So then what happens to those brothers with the job? What happens when you close them? Do they keep their job? Do you relocate them or what?
You rearrange them around the state. It's a simple chess piece move. Nobody has lost their job because the prison closed. Because you still got too many offenders. And we got about, put it like this, we have about 10,000 employees and we have about 21 and a half. So it's almost 2-1. For every offender, there's an employee. Even though all employees don't directly work, all employees don't directly work with the offenders, but at the same time, if you had to count the ratio of staff to offenders, it's about 2-1. Two offenders for every one staff member. So, you know, it still goes. We're still graduating individuals out the academy and all of that stuff. So, it's one of those businesses, like I said, that's that 20%. That's their life. They'll tell you, my whole family's been in prison, so it ain't nothing for me. This is a vacation. And until they're ready to change, then they'll start adding to the 80% that's trying to make a difference, that want to go back out to their family, but they have to go out with a different mindset. Because you got guys that, you have adults that were depending on them. You got family members, you know, you got guys that selling drugs to support mama, grandma, and all these other people who are able-bodied and can get up and go out the way. So now it's trying to get these guys to understand that when you go and you go to get a job or whatever, and you get a check, you can't tell me that you don't want to work at McDonald's for minimum wage, because our highest paying job is $3 a day, not an hour, but for the whole day. And they work sometimes up to 12 hours. So you mean to tell me you work 12 hours, and then you're lucky if you got one of the higher paying jobs, the majority of them make $1.30 a day. $1.30 for the entire day. At the end of the month, they get like $17. Wow.
That's a lot of work.
But you have to remember, and what I tell these guys is, welcome to the plantation, because the 13th Amendment of the United States Constitution says slavery is still authorized for those convicted of felony offenses.
Yeah, so they do say that.
They don't have to pay you. Technically, yeah, if they wanted to make you work for free, then you have no choice until you're released from incarceration. They do give them some money because they realize,
but this is the question, right, though. Even when some of these brothers are released from, you know, incarceration, and then and young ladies too, you know, like I have a baby cousin. I say she's a baby. She's in her 20s. She's 21. She was falsely accused of a situation. She did 9 months. Now she's out. She lives in Connecticut, and she's having a hard time finding a job because she has, you know, she's a felon. So now applying for jobs, it's tough for her. What does she do as a young black woman?
Does she know? You know what? Something as simple as, and this may sound crazy, but now you got to go outside of the non-traditional jobs. You know, because if she knows how to
babysit, go clean,
does she know how?
I don't know.
If she knows how to clean, she can start a cleaning service. You don't need but a bucket and some goddamn, what you call it, you know,
and post some ads on Craigslist or something that you can start your own cleaning business, huh?
I know she knows how to wax and buff floors because 9 out of 10 they made them do it while they were in their prison. And it sounds odd, and a lot of people say, no, ain't nobody doing that. But you know what? Those are still jobs that you can't automate. This.
No, but you know what? Automate. Doing a cleaning service type of job, if you get enough contracts, you can be in good business. I know this woman I met, she came to the Mac counter, and she told me that's what she does for a living. She has her own cleaning business, and she says she has several contracts. Now, me being nosy, you know I go look up stuff. So there's a business for people having sexy maids, women that are sexy, dressed in sexy, whatever, to go clean somebody's house.
Yeah,
the people are doing it regular ways. People are doing exotic ways. There's so many people doing entrepreneurial jobs nowadays, creating jobs, because you have to. I mean, I don't know. This is just
You got to remember, employers have the right to refuse. So they're refusing people without felony convictions. So it makes it a little bit harder. If you do have one, that's another reason why they will not take you. You know, and now you have to look at, are you able to, do you know how to fix hair, do hair, you know?
Yeah, that's
manicure. Can you Can you manage your nails? Can you give massages? Now you're looking out the box into things that people still want to need.
Because
I know damn well I ain't going to no robot to get no massage.
I will just have to admit, that's been one of my hustles for years is massage therapy. And I have a few personal clients, but see, I didn't understand that world until I was trained by a black couple here in Atlanta back in 2009. They, and I think, Dean, you knew me back then because I was going through my divorce with the kids, and I had just got back into the working world. And God just blessed me with a couple that was a wealthy black couple. They owned a holistic wellness center in Fairburn, Georgia, and they... The wife trained me on how to do correct, proper massage therapy, and she showed me how to run her business. I oversaw, and then she bounced, and they went and lived in Las Vegas. And for close to 2 years, I was running and managing their property and doing massage therapy myself, working alongside other therapists. And, you know, that is a very therapeutic but necessary way of life for some people, and it's very healthy. If people can implement that into their lifestyle, it would be a lot of less stressful people, trust me. I mean, it's a stress reliever. It's necessary. I don't know about y'all, but if y'all notice the wave of the world, everybody seems to be so tense. Everything's so fast and now, move, do this, do that. Nobody sits down at Sunday dinners anymore or has family dinners. And I don't know, it's just this world we're living in is becoming more impersonal. The personal time is impersonal.
It's simple. As soon as Dr. Spock came out and said, you can't discipline your kids, the whole world took it as being gospel. And now look at what you have. Look exactly at what you have. When somebody you're now in the minority, because now if you see somebody, a child acting crazy, and you correct them, you got to fight the parent, because the parent's like, you don't say nothing to my child, you don't know them, blah blah blah. Whereas back in the day, it didn't matter who it was. If they were older than you, it was basic respect. And when they corrected you took that correction, and then you had to worry about just letting your parents know, because as soon as your parents found out, then that was ass whipping one, two, grandma, or whoever it may have been, was whipping your ass. That doesn't happen anymore. Right. Now everybody wants to be a friend to a goddamn child and like, oh, don't say that to him, blah, blah, blah. No, I'm going to say it to him. I don't give a damn, because you know what? It worked. Everything don't work. And you have people now that'll say, you know, that's harsh. No, it's not. It's a reason that ass whipping came from a place of learning not to make that mistake again. But then the majority of people, and you see it, when I was still in uniform, you knew who was friends with their kids and who actually disciplined their kids, and they just happened to make that mistake. The ones who disciplined their kids and happened to make that mistake, you rarely saw them, if you saw them at all, because they didn't do bail, jail, contact, visits, none of that shit. But then you got people coming in raising hell. I want to know why my son didn't go to rec yesterday. Ma'am, if you don't get the hell out of my damn face. Your son didn't go to rec because nobody in his unit went to rec. But why am I explaining this shit to you? You want to come in here and get some of this? Come get some of this. But you're not going to try to tell me how to do my job now that your son has made the mistake. You know
what
I'm saying?
That's true.
I'm not one of these officers out here whooping your son ass. You should have done
that. Right.
You failed.
You need it. You should have whipped his ass.
But
yeah,
see,
now
my
know.
Job is to make sure nobody whips his ass while he's here with me.
Now, you would hope that doesn't happen, because he should be getting it from home. Like the Bible says, you spared a rod, you spoiled a child. So I'm still old school, like how my mother raised me. All she had to do was look at me. Okay, and I knew to sit my ass still. Now, that's how I was raised.
You know what? But people take parts of the Bible and then they don't take the other parts where, you know, not, okay, everybody wants to say turn the other cheek. Eventually, somebody's jaw about to get broken. You know,
yep.
Some people say, well, we church people, we supposed to be mild-mannered.
No.
No, run up on me and find out what the hell is going on, because, yeah, I believe in God. Yeah, I believe in his son Jesus. But I believe that I'm going to fuck you up if you come over here with that bullshit.
But he also said use wisdom, okay? Because if anybody understood who John the Baptist was, that was no punk nigga, okay? John the Baptist was one of those that would throw up them bows. And he also was very vocal.
Look at,
you know what I'm saying? Like, people
majority,
need to realize they need to read that
people,
word and understand it. That some of those disciples were straight gutter, okay?
They
was mad gangsters. Because
they
come here, put on your suit, go in and put on that church dress, and think that you got to be goody-goody.
They don't do that. They take the words of these TV evangelists that's raping them for their money. Those are real gangsters because they sitting
here
selling you a
dream. Those are the real gangsters and the thugs right there. They selling you a pipe dream.
If you break me off, I need 500 people to break me off with $1,000, you know, and God's going to bless you. God
and
ain't
he's
blessing
bless
you.
You.
You're blessing him.
You blessing him,
man. Your life didn't turn the fuck off because you spent the mortgage
you
money giving it to the pastor. And he driving a Bentley, not all of them, some, because the majority
of them
are
and
still
then,
out there.
And then you
the
still living in a one-bedroom shack or sleeping on your cousin's couch and still can't afford it, but you said
but
the
I'm
Lord
not talking
told
about,
you so.
I'm not talking about the pastors that are actually out here reaching people and teaching people what the word truly means. I'm talking about these pimps in the pulpit that's robbing people and telling, you know, if you send me on TV, go ahead and send me $100, and I'm going to send you this prayer, and you're going to be blessed. What the hell?
No, I totally agree with you. Totally agree, because I think this life that we're living in, you still got to use, like the Bible, you got to use wisdom. The book of Proverbs is nothing but scriptures based on wisdom. Knowledge
and
if you're not reading it like the book of Luke says, study to show thy what? Thyself approved.
Yeah,
study
but you
to
know
show
what?
Thyself
here's
approved.
The thing.
So this
here's
is the sad
thing.
Part.
Our
I go to church sometimes and people just sit there, Dean. They sit there and they listen to the pastors. They, oh yeah, hallelujah, amen. Glory to God. And guess what? Never once do they open up that word. Never once do I see some of these people.
Our generation has turned into a passive one, and we're the ones that fucked up the formula. Because all the way up until our generation, it was this way right here. And somebody said, we can do it better. We can change it. We don't have to beat our kids. Let's talk to them. We're talking don't work all the time. Beating don't work all the time either. But at the same time, you got to find that balance. Like our parents and our grandparents and so on and so forth did with us, you know. But now we got kids playing in a sport. They lost every game, but they get a trophy. Are you kidding me? No, you lost every game. Now you learn the valuable life lesson. You're not going to win all of the time. Try it again next year. But no, that's too harsh for a lot of people. So they end up giving kids participation trophy. What the hell is a participation trophy? You know what I'm saying?
There shouldn't be no damn participation trophy. Let's just go for the gusto and say, just do the damn thing. You know,
that's
I remember back in the days when I was a kid, they used to give somebody called an honorable mention. You know, that was for the ones that kind of didn't go all the way, but they kind of, you know, they had to acknowledge. Because you have to remember, when we're young, yeah, you got to stroke those egos. And you have to encourage because
you're still building
the confidence in these children.
No, you don't.
Have to do that a little bit.
You teach the life lesson. When you give children shit like honorable mention and participation trophies, they feel entitled.
They feel entitled.
You're not teaching them how to get better. You're not telling them how to do it so that they can come out better than the first time they tried it. You're not telling them to critically think and think of an alternate way to fix a problem, because they figure the problem is supposed to be fixed from the jump. You're not teaching them anything by giving them honorable mention. There ain't nothing honorable to mention. Either you won or you lost.
Right.
That's simple. But when we break it down and say, oh, we got to stroke your ego, well, then you're sending the wrong message, because now they become adults who look for their ego to be stroked.
Well, I get your point.
Now we got a serious problem, because they're no longer children. They're full-blown adults. And all their life,
these
somebody
and,
is
and you know what? And then some of these full-grown adults,
individual who ain't stroking.
Right. And then you got some of these young, these adults that, as Diddy used that term, and I love the term, bitch ass. Okay? Stop being a bitch ass. Stop being a bitch ass. You got more men sometimes, more sensitive than women, and you can't
why
say certain things nowadays.
Why is that?
You know what? I'm not a man, but I will say this. I get tired of punk ass niggas that really don't got a backbone. They want to go tit for tat with me as a woman. I'm a woman, nigga. I'm a woman, and you shouldn't be doing. You shouldn't have no lip going back and forth with a woman. A real man does not stand there and argue with a woman. Oh, so what you say? He was raised without a man in his life?
He was babied.
Oh, he was babied.
And no matter what person gave him the business, it was somebody, don't talk to him like that. He's just a kid. Don't talk to him like that. He's just a teenager. Don't talk to him like that. He's just a young adult. So now you got a grown-ass man that don't want to work. You got a dude that's sitting there waiting for some woman to take care of him. Why? Because somebody has been taking care of him all of his life, washing his underwear, getting shit for him. He don't have to do nothing because it's already been done. So then he doesn't learn how to do anything for himself, because he's always had to cater to him. So why would you think he's gonna sit there and he's gonna go back and forth until the end of the day? Because the first thing he's gonna tell you is, he gonna tell you, and most babies will tell you, I'm a grown ass man. Well, if you gotta tell somebody you're a grown ass man,
and I receive what you're saying, because that to me is when you have really put your foot in your mouth, when you have to use that, and women say it too, and this is when I feel that you are not really grown at all, when somebody has to use the term, I'm a grown ass woman, or I'm a grown ass man. You just really show me your immaturity level, because a real grown ass person doesn't have to continue to reiterate, I'm a grown ass man. Because you're really not a grown, you're a grown ass baby, you're a grown man still being a child.
Those are the same individuals that get into a disagreement. Who's the first person they call? They mama.
They mother.
Ma, let me tell you what happened. I wish the hell your mama would call me on anything, because I'm fucking her ass out.
So, Mark Lee, he's back with us, Dean. He made it back with us. So, Mark, are you a mama's boy?
I love my mama dearly, but I would not call myself a mama's boy, because I definitely don't know how to stand up to anybody. But I also love my mom and my dad dearly.
Now, Dean, were you a mama's boy?
No.
I will say.
I didn't want my mama to kiss me, hug me, nothing. She liked to take pictures and stuff, God rest her soul. But I was not, no, because I had a father right there. My mother taught me compassion and stuff like that. My father taught me how to be a gentleman. So, I mean, it wasn't no, you know, if my dad jumped in my ass, my mom was right there backing my dad up. I thought they were the worst tag team in the fucking world.
Now,
I had no win.
I want to know from y'all men, when was your first encounter with knowing that there's a sensation going on down there and I'm into women and I'm curious? How old were you? Because my son, God bless him, today is his birthday. He turned 11 years old. Happy birthday to my baby boy, Son Ali. He turned 11 years old today. The day marked a beautiful day for him. But he was here over the summer visiting mommy, and I happened to let him use my phone. A lot of times he wanted to go on YouTube. And so one day I happened to be scrolling through the YouTube because I like attaching it to my auxiliary cord and playing some music in my car. And I noticed the Griffin family. You know that Griffin family, that animation? What is it? Family,
yeah, family.
Something, Family Guy. So there were some YouTube cartoons with the mom and the dad getting it on in the bed. And my son was watching these things. And then it went from animation to regular videos. And my mouth just... Because I'm like, oh, my God, this is my baby. He's 10 years old. What are you doing watching sex? But I know my son is straight. But he was embarrassed. He cried. He called himself a jerk. I had to have the talk with him. And now he's fine. It is refreshing to know that he is heterosexual. But, wow. And I asked him, so when did this start? He said when he was 7.
That sounds about
right. Oh, my God.
Sounds about right. My nephews are 6 and 7. Yeah, my nephews are 6 and 7, and they definitely know those girls right now. They are 6 and 7.
What in the world? What in the world? So you guys at 7 and 8 years old was getting it on, or you were just curious?
I think it was more curiosity. I don't think we're getting it. I think the getting on came, well, I was a late bloomer, but I know a lot of my boys were getting it on when they were like 9, 10, 11, maybe even 8.
I know, because I asked random men, and one guy told me he was 10 years old. It was his babysitter. She was 16. I'm like, what in the heck is a 16-year-old doing with you? And then I get from other stories, it could start from 10 up to like 12, 9. I'm like, and then it was always somebody's babysitter or some little fast girl they knew. One was a teenager. She was 19. He was 12. Well, he was 10 and 11. I'm like, are you kidding me? Is this really happening? Is this where y'all men are getting deflowered by some little horny older female that know y'all was too young? What does she know? What can you do?
But this is across the board. Let me just give you a little story that I heard about. Like I said, we celebrated Christmas a little bit early because my brother being a divorcee. So I got together with my nephews and mom and my younger brother on yesterday. And we spent a little bit of the day together as well. But my brother's got a lady friend who's got a 9-year-old son and a 13-year-old daughter. My brother's going to the mall with the 13-year-old daughter tomorrow, I believe. It's either tomorrow or Wednesday. He is going for one specific purpose. His now lady friend has got him basically serving as the watchdog. He is going to the ball with them to make sure no little guys are sniffing around the girls. That is his job.
Well, I don't see nothing wrong with that.
No, okay. I'm saying that's nothing wrong at all.
No, I don't see nothing wrong with that. Now, I think chaperoning should still exist.
Exactly. And that's
we don't need our children babies having babies. Like, so if you're still old-fashioned with the way you raise your children, I see nothing wrong with that. My mom, thank God, they had a trust factor with me. I went to my prom. I didn't have a curfew, but guess what? I kept my virginity. I didn't lose it until I went to college. The rest was history, but at the end of the day, I did hold on at least until I was 18. So, wow. You know, it's one of those things. It's going to happen eventually. I tried to wait till marriage, but hey, college got the best of me. So with that said, my boyfriend in high school that took me to my prom was highly disappointed because, of course, he was expecting, ooh, this is prom night. We're going to do something. I think that's the tradition with people. They think that the prom is supposed to be when things like that happen. Who knows?
No, started way before prom.
Started way before prom?
Way before prom.
Well, 14. On that note,
I just say this. We're going to end this with some final thoughts. I want to thank my brothers, Dean Geronimo, producer for the Talk Voice of the People, as well as Mark Lee, who is the co-host for the Voice of the People. And we're going to proceed to continue to bring, you know, fresh topics, new and fresh ideas, and continue with, you know, featured guests that will be a part of this show. And we ourselves will continue to go on in this new year, because it's approaching, guys. It's approaching. So anybody got any New Year's resolutions, or does anybody even believe in that stuff?
Nope.
Dean says no. Mark?
I try to believe in them, but they never seem to work. But it's usually the same ones all the time. So that'll tell you they don't work all the time.
Lose weight or quit something. Everybody's is always weight in something or eating better.
Well, I probably need to eat better, but that's never one that's included. I will admit to being a self-avowed person that collects too much junk and hoards a little bit too much. So I always say that I'm going to make things a little bit neater and do a better job of organizing. Never happens, but I try.
So you know what, Mark? You might need to just hire yourself one of those little Mexicans and pay them a small little fee and let them come in your house and do some organizing for you. Hey, it's labor. They'll do it. People do it. I know my godmother, she has two Mexican females that come and clean the house because she's too busy with her schedule running schools and water ed and all that, that she hires two females. She pays them a certain amount of money. They come twice a week. And they clean the top part of the house, the bottom part. It's just some things I'm starting to learn as we get older. We can multitask some things. And if some things are just out of our control, instead of overwhelming ourselves with everything, start to become more proactive with just being more, you know, savvy with how you handle the day-to-day things that you can't handle. You might need some help. There's nothing wrong with getting help. Trust me. You know, I'm learning now, like I realize I hate doing my laundry and I don't do it. I actually take it to a place that is a wash and fold. They charge 99 cents a pound. So for 99 cents a pound, I don't let it go over $20, $30, $35. Sometimes it's only 18 or 17, but I take it to them, I drop it off, they wash, fold, put it in a nice bag, and I could put my clothes away, and that's that, you know? It's just some things that I realize that, you know, if I have a busy schedule and I can't get to doing certain things, I get the help. I think, you know, we all can find other ways and other means if we're single, you know, and we're married. Dean has another way he lives his lifestyle and the things that they do to keep their house going. But when you're juggling so many different things, you got to find help somehow, some way.
True that.
You know? So with that said, let's end it with the final thoughts for the night. Mark Lee, we'll let you go with your final thought for this evening.
I hope that everybody out there is ready to have a sensational holiday season and that they are prepared for making 2016 one of the best years ever. As we approach a new year, we know that there's going to be some difficult times that we're going to be approaching. We're going to have to make some difficult decisions in terms of presidential and other political things. But hopefully we're going to be moving in a more positive direction, and that is my thought for today.
Amen to that. I'll let myself go because Dean Geronimo always has something very enlightening to say for his final thought. So we'll just and my final thought will be this. We are about to approach in just another week. We're stepping into another era, another year. A new year is upon us. And with that said, that's exciting time because there's a newness to about to come. So with that, there is always room to improve, self-improvement, self-motivation, and empower your mind by continuing to be more proactive with
educating yourself, whether it be with self-education, reading books, getting online to go to school, whatever it is to enhance yourself in this future, in this world, please do so, so that way you can remain competitive with how the world is advancing. Also on that note, take time to love yourself. Self-love is so important, and so is respect of other people. No matter what color, race, or creed, or a little love goes a long way, and we all need that in this type of world that we are living. Protect your family first. Always try to put God first if you are a believer. And on a brighter note, just thank God for the breath he gives you, because tomorrow is never promised. And I also just want to thank all those that have continued to support us and continue to support us. We thank you for your listener support. And tune in every Monday night, 8 o'clock, right here on The Voice of the People. Ty Jones and Mark Lee. Dean Geronimo, you take it away. Oh, he dropped it. Something must have happened with his reception. Maybe. Oh, there he goes. Okay, Dean, you can take it for the take it away from there.
You know, I guess I don't know. Thinking about things that are going on, you know, everywhere. We got to take it back to the old school values. Our ancestors and our elders had that formula. They passed it on. And we tried to come with the, you know, instead of the old formula Coca-Cola, we tried to make the new Coke. And, you know, that didn't last long because things are not coming out quite right. And the same thing with trying to change tradition, trying to change how things used to be. We got to get back to that because, you know, everybody's worried about what's going on in the world. What's going on in our world? What's going on? What are we doing? Are we,
what's going on in your house,
climbing?
Right? Clean your first house.
Are we climbing or are we lifting somebody up as we go along? So, you know, with that, and especially, you know, a lot of people believe in New Year's resolutions. But I don't, because life goes on. And what happens is every day we get a little bit closer to that day when we're going to depart. But the question is not the birth date and the return date is not important, but what you did in between that makes a difference. So, you know, if we all get back to trying to make a difference while we're still in that between stage, it might just make how we exist a little bit better as a collective. And there's a lot of people that's out here out for self, and that's fine, you know. But in order to be trusted, you must show yourself to be trustworthy. And we got to get back to being trustworthy and being able to not be so jealous of another person's success or, you know, ready to put down them on their failures, because everybody has failed is whether or not you got back up after you made that mistake, after you fell down. You know, that Japanese proverb says, fall down 7 times, get up 8. And
that's right.
A lot of people just read it for what it is, but if you continue to try, it's better to try and fail, you know, than to fail to try. So with that being said, Monday night, 8 p.m., The Voice of the People, Todd Jones, the host, Mark Lee, co-host, and me, Dean Geronimo, in the background. Catch me if you can. I'm out. Peace and blessings.
We are out. Peace and blessings taking us out. The Art of Noise with a little bit of moments in love right here on The Voice of the People. Needed a little bit of love tonight.
No doubt. Take it easy, folks.
Take it easy, Mark. See you next week. Or talk to you next week.
Talk to you next week. Thank you.